It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some. I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out. 5 hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
Molly and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. Every day is Christmas when we have Olin on, but my God, do we have cold in our stocking this morning. Olin Krutz joins us now on the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire, aturo.com. Good morning, Olin. How are you?
I'm doing good. I was thinking why you said that, but not this morning, right?
Yeah.
This morning, not
today.
Not today. Rewatching that game, guys, man, you go through all the emotions again of it being so bad for so long, but the defense hanging in there, right? Keeping the Bears in the game by being so stout against the number one red zone offense in the NFL. And then the comeback, Caleb Williams. I was thinking when I was watching, we talked about it last night, I was thinking Ryan Poles, he was going to be a prophet, right? He was saying that he had to lean on his teammates and then do the special when it was time to do the special. And you guys remember that throw to DeAndre Carter when DJ Moore got hurt. That was a special throw there, right? Before the
sidearm
they tried
throw.
A sidearm throw. It was really special, man. It's just – and you go through the emotion of, man, they're going to win this game. And then how do you lose on that Hail Mary? And just a failure of discipline and execution. And I heard David put it really well this morning, saying you have to learn how to win in the NFL. You have to learn – exactly what that means and exactly paying attention to details during the week when you're walking through. I think someone said Coach Eberflus talked about we walked through that play 1,000 times. He's not lying, guys. I've seen it before. I've watched Hail Marys be walked through. Your job, this is what you do. Box him out. This guy has the jumper. This guy's the savior. This guy has the front. So it was just, man, it was just hard to watch. Even again, this morning, going through the game really quickly. Just tough to watch them. It's such a gritty performance. I mean, on Keenan Allen's pass interference, guys, there, I think it was 4th and 3. Karan and Doug Kramer are one-on-one, right? They're in a one-on-one pass rush situation there, and they both win. And it just to see guys play that gutty, that kind of performance, that team fight that long, and then lose that game, as frustrating as it was, it was even more frustrating to watch this morning, that final play.
On the Hail Mary, everyone does have a role to play. I don't think one of those roles includes taunting the crowd with your back to the line of scrimmage when the ball is snapped. Tyreek Stevenson did that. If you're a veteran, if you're a captain in that locker room on that team, Olin, how would you handle this situation?
It's a really good question, right? And I think that we all know how I would have handled this situation, on airplane or in the locker room. But they have leaders on that team, right? And here's the thing that I immediately think about, guys, when I think about what should happen. What should they do? What should have happened? It should have happened weeks ago, right? The question I would ask Coach Eberflus is, Coach, have we seen any of this before? Have we allowed this kind of behavior for weeks, for months, and then it led to this? Because I see the same guy poking guys in the face, right? I see the same guy doing that. And I think to myself, man, what has he done that you allowed for so long that has led up to the fact that on a Hail Mary play, he's not facing the line of scrimmage? And I know he came out on Twitter and he apologized to everybody for his actions. But my thought immediately when I see something like that, guys, is something's been going on for a while that you haven't nipped in the bud and you haven't taken care of. And I'm just guessing. And to me, really, the punishment should fit that. Is this the first time? Is he a pro every day? Does he work hard? Because, look, he does even make a good play in this game. He's a good football player against Zach Ertz, right? I think it was third down in the end zone. And he pushes the ball out. Good football play. Tyreek Stevenson is a good football player. And you give a little more leeway to a guy who can play the game. But if this has been going on for a while, if he's been late to meetings, if I have to talk to him too many times, and now this happened, then the punishment has to fit the crime.
It's a great point, Olin. I thought the takeaway you had yesterday, when you watch Caleb Williams play not a very good football game, but then he gets to the fourth quarter, and as you say, time to do the special. And the guy leads you to a touchdown with 30 seconds left, despite one of the worst calls I've seen on third down, third and five, and they do a quarterback draw, and he gets clobbered. Then he comes back on fourth and three. You get the pass interference penalty. Then you finally score the touchdown. To lose that moment for that kid in his homecoming, all the rest of it, that's one of the sickest things that came out of the end of that game.
Yes, and you know, like you're talking about, we talked about going to the game, going home, would he feel some of the nerves, right? It sure looked like it, right? He missed a lot of balls early on. Remember the slide on 32, right? Lule could have got the first down in the first quarter, and he slid on 32. Just not a good game by Caleb. I thought they should have took him out of that checking. He was going one-on-one with Bobby Wagner, who's about 52 years old. So he knows what you're saying out there on the football field. But, you know, I know what they're thinking there, right? They're thinking we're gonna go for it for two downs anyway. So I think that was a sweep to Caleb Williams down there. And then the fourth and three. And you're right. I didn't like that call either. But when you're talking about what do you take out of this game, right? What do you take out of the positive out of this game, the game that you lost? It's that you had a quarterback making plays, making throws, leading you down the field, laying the game, doing the special. And guys, go through all the games because I did it today. And I'm not going to bore the listeners. But he's done it a lot now. He did it against the Titans. At the end of the first half, he got a field goal. Against Houston, at the end of the first half, he got a field goal. He let him down late in the game. He got a touchdown, right? Against Indy, he let him down. He got a touchdown. The defense didn't get him the ball back. He got a field goal at the end of halves, guys. At the end of games, if you go through every one of the Bears games, Caleb Williams is doing the things we talk about that quarterbacks have to do to win football games. He's elevating his teammates. They talk about him being a multiplier. Guys, look at the offensive line he had on the field at the end of that football game against Washington. DJ Moore is hurt on the sideline. I just told you about how he threw the ball to DeAndre Carter. He against the Panthers with 55 seconds left, five plays, 65 yards, a touchdown in the first half, right? Against the Jaguars, same thing, touchdown, first half. Against the Washington, he brings him down at the end of the game. He scores. And you guys, you go through every game at the critical moments. We talk about 2-for-1. You got to score at the end of the halves, and you got to score at the end of the game. And that falls on a quarterback and his arm and his ability to make plays in the pocket. I'm telling you guys, if you go through the games again, if you go through all of the Chicago Bears games, every game he's made a play in those situations, he's had drives to score points. So the Chicago Bears, if you're talking about what do you take positive out of this football game, if you go back and look at what they've done, at what Caleb Williams has done, at what Ryan Poles has called doing the special, guys, they have that going on right now. They got to get that Hail Mary fixed, and they got to get it fixed during the game. We got to start a little earlier. We got to score points. We got to get the ball moving. Can't let them move the ball up and down the field even though you kept them out of the end zone. But if you're talking about what we've been talking about for years around here, that we need a quarterback in critical situations to make plays, this guy Caleb Williams now, he has done that to start this season.
This segment with Olin Krutz, sponsored by Fireplace and Chimney Authority. Visit online or their Elmhurst and Lyle showrooms. Well, a special quarterback needs a competent play caller, and I'm not sure he has one of those after yesterday, Olin. It might be time to reconvene the leadership council because Shane Waldron needs an intervention. Yesterday, handing the ball to Doug Kramer was inexcusable. And I don't know how you respond to that. I don't know if you take away play calling duties. I don't know if you're Eberflus what you do now, but I just think there's no confidence in Shane Waldron. The Colts example, speed option on fourth and goal, you lose 12. Now yesterday, in big moments, he is cowering, or he's being too cute. He's not getting it done. What would you do about the offensive play caller?
Yeah, and then that Colts example, right, is another example of Caleb Williams in a critical situation, putting together a great drive. What do I do with the play caller? David, I know what you're saying. In critical situations, man, that head coach is on the headset too, right? He hears the play get called. You have to step in there and say, no. Let's get the ball to Roschon Johnson behind Darnell Wright, who I thought played a good football game, who also made a big-time block to take the lead. Right now, I wouldn't overreact. I understand what you're saying. I know Shane Waldron has had some moments this year, man. We're talking about the handoff to Doug Kramer. You talked about the option, talked about the run. We've said many a times, there are less elite play callers in the NFL than there are elite quarterbacks. They are hard to find. I don't think Shane Waldron has got his play calling sheet taken away yet, David. Not yet. But there is some frustrating calls in there right now. Coach Eberflus has to be the leader they pay him to be. And he's got to step in. He's got to get that Hail Mary corrected. He's got to get some of his play calling corrected. This team, all of them, everybody in that building, from the top to the bottom, I talked about it too much. It's learning how to win football games. We talked about on the pre- and post-game show yesterday that I became a worse football player when I learned how to win football games, right, because I got older. But I knew how important walkthroughs were. I knew how important the details were in critical situations. I knew that sometimes I could go to Ron Turner, Harry Hiestand, Mike Martz, Mike Tice, John Shute. I knew I could go to them sometimes and say, that handoff to Doug Kramer. Let's talk about that a little bit. When do we plan to use that play right there? Because this is not a good play call right now. There's a lot there. They're talking about details, right? The handoff was quick. You heard Tony Romo talk about how Caleb's got to stay there. Now, look. It goes through all of it, right? That situation, don't even put them in that situation. But if they do, if they say, we trust this quarterback, we trust this player, everybody's getting paid on this football field, execute the handoff, get the ball in the end zone. It just goes through everybody doing those things. But I wouldn't take away his play calling duties just yet. You don't want that young quarterback going through that situation right now.
And I think it's difficult to maintain any perspective on this stuff this morning because they had won three games in a row, right? And they were a hair away from making it a four-game winning streak, which is hard to do in the NFL. And instead, they find a way to lose that game. And again, they found a way to win it. It wasn't a game they really earned, but they were leading. And then you lose in this heartbreaking fashion. And it's almost like you're a punchline around the league. Like, you look at everybody.
This morning?
Oh, yeah.
Yes,
no
absolutely.
No question about it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, as you said yesterday, you can't let that loss have you go to Arizona and lose again. And they got to figure out a way to win on the road. And they need to be as focused in this game as they're going to be, especially if anything's wrong with Montez Sweat, if their offensive line is as beaten up as it is. Mm-hmm. It's frightening stuff. It's a real key point in the season.
Yeah, they come out of that game beat up, right? Tevin Jenkins, Braxton Jones, Montez Sweat. They already were missing Kyler Gordon. They are missing Jaquan Brisker. Those are a lot of guys, a lot of high-level football players to miss, right, and then fly across to Arizona. We know that's a hard flight. There's a time change. Although the Bears fans do travel to Arizona, you can turn that field into a home game for yourself. If you get there, you jump on them early, and you get a good win. Kyler Murray, it's going to be a fun game to watch him versus Caleb Williams. But like you're saying, and I talked about yesterday on the post-game show, my two boys play for Illinois. They got beat up pretty bad by Oregon. And I thought Coach Bielema said a great thing after the game. He said, we can't let Oregon beat us twice. And that's exactly what the Bears are going through right now, Molly, after a loss like that, right? After those emotions. But immediately you think about, okay, well, how do we get this thing turned around, put on the tracks, moving in the right direction? Tyreek Stevenson, I thought, took a step. I thought he took a step by apologizing to his fans, apologizing to everybody, taking the blame. And look, I'd like to see the guy who was supposed to be the savior take the blame and say, I was supposed to do that. I was coached to do it, and I did it. Guys got to stand up. Leaders got to stand up. I remember sometimes guys being in the locker room. We get stopped on 4th and 1. I didn't miss my block. Guess what I said? That 4th and 1 was my fault. I got to make my block. I got to do my job there. And that's just telling everybody. This is the attitude we take. Don't point fingers. Don't try to decide on what you're going to do and what you're not going to do and whose fault it was. Just worry about what the hell you got to correct. Get what you got to get corrected. And then as the week inches on, guys, Wednesday, Thursday, you start to whisper to everybody, how about our quarterback, man? How about the plays he makes late in games? All right? How about our defense in the red zone holding on versus the number one red zone offense? How about all the good things we did do after you let the loss marinate for a little while? You start to point out how good of a football team you are. We still have a winning record. We're still right where we need to be. And more importantly, like I told you guys, we have a quarterback doing special things at the end and at the end of halves and at the end of games. And that guys, like you know, is critical to winning in the NFL.
That's a great perspective. It really is. And I think that's the right way the Bears have to approach today and the rest of the week, Olin, especially with the long trip ahead. I want to ask you about the offensive line. We've had to see Karan Amagaji forced into action, and he was overmatched on certain plays. I wondered what you saw in terms of how they might have been able to help him or what they do now moving forward, depending on Braxton Jones's injury, and also address the uncomfortable situation they might be in and having to appeal to Nate Davis now that they need him to play, get over whatever is keeping him back, and be a professional.
Yeah, it's a crazy business, man. Sometimes you walk in there and no one's talking to you, and all of a sudden they need you and they're friendly again in the morning, right? But there's just not a lot of good offensive line, especially when you start to lose guys in the NFL. I always tell people there's not a lot of guys who block people. As far as Karan goes, struggled with his kick step a little bit yesterday. By that I mean getting back off the line of scrimmage, pushing through his right leg. Looked like he was kind of shoveling his left foot under him. I don't want to get into all this technique stuff for offensive line play, but he struggled like you thought a guy might who came off an injury to get in the game. He did have that big block on Swift's run, did a nice job in the run game. I will say this, you do see why they drafted him. You do see the length, you do see the height, and you do see the size, and you do see the power that he puts on film. And he did win some of his pass roles, not against, you know, the Commanders don't have any elite pass rushers, but, you know, to put Doug Kramer in there at left guard, you know you've gone through your injuries. And that's where Nate Davis not doing the things he's supposed to be doing, right? We're talking about Tyreek Stevenson. What should they do with him? Well, same thing with Nate Davis, right? They have a few guys in there not doing what they're supposed to be doing. He should have a jersey on. He should be up. He should be in the game right away when you have those kind of injuries. And you see Murray walk out there. You know, Tevin Jenkins got hurt on Doug Kramer's play by the end zone. He got hurt. He got bent over backwards. And then Braxton Jones actually got hurt on the 4th and 1 that DJ Moore didn't get. So those plays are not only – bad play calls, maybe. You lose two offensive linemen on those plays, too. So Larry Borum, hopefully he's getting healthy. Bates, hopefully he's getting healthy. Hopefully you get those guys in the mix and then find yourself an offensive line that you can take on the road and win a football game. Because I'll be honest with you, you start to lose guys. Any team loses guys on their offensive line. It's hard to find.
You talked yesterday, and I thought it was just an excellent point, the idea that when we talk about winning on the road, it's a lot of small things. It's a lot of the little details that you have to get right. And you wondered if there are veteran players that are doing the things that you would do in terms of if you see a guy that isn't paying attention or is kind of goofing around in the walkthrough, hey, what were you told to do on that play? Are you listening to what? I hope that's going on. And that's the thing that you worry about when you think of a guy like Tyreek Stevenson.
Mm-hmm. It's a great point. And it's something I also had to learn. And I don't think I really learned it into my 8th or 9th year in the NFL, just how to win games and how to lead in those situations. I remember Harry Hiestand telling me one time, you guys all know Harry Hiestand, probably the best offensive line coach in the world. He told me one time, he said, Olin, you like to play around all the time and you do your job, but it affects everybody else, right? I did like to laugh and joke, and you guys knew me when I played and really, really harassed anybody I could harass at any moment I could. But, you know, Harry pointed out to me that while I was doing that, not everybody could concentrate and do that at the same time, right? So as a leader, you start to learn those things and you start to watch guys like, you know, when they're installing a play that we might have to execute at a critical situation in the game, and you're watching to make sure guys are paying attention, taking that in. They don't look too sleepy. They're hearing the details. And then you go up, if you don't think so, you go up to them and ask them and say, hey, man, did you hear what we're talking about there? You know what to do in that situation. You know what you're doing, because those little walkthroughs there, Pat Manley had a great point, right? Only the ones get that walkthrough. Only the ones get the Hail Mary walkthrough, and they had backups in the game that day. So how many times were those guys on the field? So just a lot of things go on in that situation that is what I'm talking about. When people say, I know it sounds crazy that people talk about leadership, it's hard to define. People talk about culture, it's hard to define. People talk about the details. How do you win games? Learning how to win. It's hard to define. I'm defining for you right now. It's Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. Listening in meetings, doing all the little things right, seeing the game, how you fit in the game, what you're supposed to do in critical situations, and how you actually win football games in the NFL. It really is that simple. It's just that hard to do, to pay attention every day early in the week.
This segment with Olin Krute, sponsored by Busey Bank, building business, growing wealth since 1868. Thank you, Olin. Great stuff.
Thanks, Olin. Good
Appreciate
stuff.
Appreciate it, guys.
Yep.
That is Olin Krute. It's better over
here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
For the past 3 seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a 4th season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Chelios. Up the boards to Chelios with room. He shoots. Score!
BetMGM ambassador, the king of sportsbooks.
Nice play by Chris Chelios.
Hockey Hall of Famer.
Chris Chelios is not human. I'm convinced of it. Not only will he go in the Hall of Fame, I think he should go in the Smithsonian.
Blackhawks legend.
Chelios will add defense, but he'll also add offense to the Hawks.
Steve Smith, the head to Murphy. Nichols at the line. Chelios moving in.
Time Stanley Cup champion.
What a competitor Chris Chelios has been over the years, and he's been a winner every place he's ever been.
Chris Chelios with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Always a delight to talk to our friend Chris Chelios, BetMGM Grand Ambassador, BetMGM, the king of sportsbooks. And Chris joins us on the Aturo Hotline. Aturo, your all-weather tire, aturo.com. Morning, Chris. How are you?
I'm great. How are you guys doing?
Doing all right.
We're trying to figure out what would be the hockey equivalent of a Hail Mary pass. Is it maybe pulling the goalie in the second period rather than at the end of the game?
No, but I'm glad that you brought that up first. So there's a term in hockey called the bag skate. It's basically a punishment for doing something stupid. And you're on the ice, and the coach skates you for an hour, no pucks, and just until you drop. And that's what they should do to Stevenson. They should line him up on the goal line and just make him run for an hour, and then maybe even throw in the stadium stairs for punishment.
Have you ever had a younger teammate do something that silly? And how would a player like you handle something like that?
Never. I can remember one time one guy had kind of a crazy celebration for his first goal. It was almost... It was like borderline embarrassing, but it was genuine, and he was just so excited. But no, this is right at the top of the dumbest things I've ever seen.
Yeah, I mean, look, I get it. He was happy, and someone was jawing at him. But when you see that, and some of the reporters noticed it while the game was ongoing, it just makes you wonder, how did they not see it in the press box? How did they not call a timeout? How did they not stop what was happening when the guy wasn't paying attention? It's just madness.
Yeah. I mean, again, when things go wrong, that's the kind of stuff that happens. So anyway, let's move on. That was a disaster.
Chris, were you at the Yankees game?
I was. Yeah, I'm still here. I came in for the three games, and then I'm going to go to that Ranger game on Friday. So,
wow.
Yeah.
So what brought you to New York, and who were you cheering for?
Honestly, I try and make it to like the World Series and Super Bowls when I can, when I'm not working. And I, you know, obviously a big fan of Anthony Rizzo. Got to know his family, so it's, you know, that I'm cheering for the Yankees. I would have hated to see them lose at home, and now hopefully they'll win tonight and make a series out of it. I'm not a big fan of LA people, but I don't mind the Dodgers. They got what a great team. Yeah, they're loaded, boy. They're fun to watch.
I thought it was one of the more bizarre things I've seen. I wonder what it was like being there when Mookie Betts catches the ball in the crowd and two guys like attack him and pull the ball out of his glove.
And they did attack him.
I mean, that's one of the greatest things I've ever seen, too. Like the fans, the way the fans cheered for those two guys and literally ripped the glove, grabbed his arm, nearly pulled his hand out of his glove. Like, it was great.
So if you're there with Rizzo, is this it for him? Do you think he comes back and plays next year? Is he going to walk away? This is swan song?
I mean, I don't know. He's actually had a really good, you know, the two series he's been in. He's one of the guys that gets on base and plays the game the way you're supposed to. Unfortunately, the last couple of years, he's had some weird injuries, right? The neck, and then he broke his hand. But when he's healthy, boy, he's effective. And you saw the catch he made and the couple plays he made, you know, defensively. There's no question that's a value, too. So I hope he keeps playing. I know he loves New York, and, you know, I got to know his in-laws are Greek, so they're a lot of fun.
Charlie, what do you think about the Hawks lately? They go into Denver. They get a victory they needed. They had lost four in a row. Have they turned the corner?
Well, it's a big win for sure. Now they're going into San Jose, right? So they keep moving forward. That's a game they should win. You know, they should get some confidence off that, you know, the Colorado game. I know there's two empty net goals, but they still played good. And quite honestly, again, I've said it, you know, during the course of the shows in the past few weeks, They're not getting outshot like they were last year. They're in the games. They're very even games, and they just came on the wrong side those last four. But they got to, you know, to take a step forward, they got to beat San Jose, and then they'll have a tough game in L.A. But, again, I like the way they're playing. I like the guys they added. You know, Maroon's doing his job. You know, Foligno plays his role. And again, maybe there's still more room for improvement, but they're definitely playing a better game defensively in the way they should be playing.
You know, that victory looked so good because they got a couple of empty netters at the end there, so they end up winning 5-2. Nice to see them just come. It's nice to see a scoreline that looked professional.
Yeah, it's misleading, and I didn't realize it either until I saw the two empty net goals. But again, the fact that that's a tough place to play in Colorado. They're not quite a desperate team, but they're a team that's been struggling, you know, over the past year and a half, too. They just haven't found their game. But, again, that's one of the toughest places to go in and win a road game with that air and, you know, the team that they have and the speed you're dealing with.
Kelly, Connor Murphy has been laying the wood. He has been very physical. A couple monster hits this year so far. Is he a different player this year, or has he been doing that for a long time and we just haven't noticed as much?
No, I think he came out and from day first game, he drawn penalties. He ran one of the other team's best players. And that's what he needs to be. Every coach, they talk about consistency. You can't show up once every four or five games. And I think Connor Murphy realizes there's a competition there on the back end. There's guys ready to, you know, possibly take his job. So he's been great. You know, they put him down in the, you know, fourth and fifth and sixth pairings, and he's way more effective there. But, yeah, he's bringing it every night, and I always compared him to, like, a Keith Magnuson, plays with a lot of heart, not the most skill in the world, but he's got off to a good start, and he's been very effective. They need to do that. They need to initiate things like Murphy's doing and draw some penalties. And, you know, the way their power play, you know, they came out of the gate with, you know, with that power play, that'll win some games for you.
Great stuff, Chris. Appreciate it.
Enjoy game five.
All right, guys. Take care. Thank you.
That is Chris Chelios. I love his in-laws are Greek. That's hysterical.
And he's in New York for the World Series because he just likes to go to World Series and Super Bowls.
But he knows everyone.
He knows everybody.
He literally knows everybody in the world.
I thought he might have a little more love for the Dodgers given his time in Malibu.
Yeah, that's interesting. He doesn't like LA.
He doesn't
people.
Like LA people.
It's pretty funny. That's pretty funny.
That's awesome. He's great.
Yeah, he's the best. I love.
Didn't you just know he would be at the World Series? I mean, we should have known that.
Yeah, I mean,
he's everywhere.
I can't believe you asked him. You know what else is hysterical? Can you imagine if anybody somehow got out of the stands and messed with him?
Oh.
But he got a kick out of seeing what happened with Mookie.
He might be in the penalty box.
All right, that's pretty funny stuff. We've got Stacey Dales. She's going to join us next. We'll get her perspective on, and you know, Stacey knows everyone, the national reaction to what has gone on with the Bears. We'll talk to Stacey Dales next. Mully and Haw on the Score.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on a required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. We love our opportunity to talk to Mike Florio, and he joins us on the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire, aturo.com. Michael, good morning. How are you?
Doing great. Doing great. How are you? Everyone recovered from Sunday?
No, not yet. Not yet, Mike.
No, we will not recover.
Too soon.
It's going to leave a mark, and that's let me tell you something. Like I saw Tim Walz made a joke about it in Wisconsin yesterday. That's how bad things are that it's become a national laughingstock. The Bears somehow losing a game on a and somebody texted in and said, "Well, that you know that happens all the time. You can't get upset." 6 years since a team lost in that fashion
on a
Hail Mary.
Yeah.
Hail Mary full of disgrace was what one texter said, Mike. So the prayer has been damaged by that.
I'm thinking that maybe the Bears should just go ahead and trade Tyrique Stevenson to the Commanders since he already plays for them, right? He's still got a week to make it formal. It just everything about it, that play was so bizarre. And there were two holds that weren't called.
Yep.
And of course, nobody wants to hear about that because it disrupts the, oh my gosh, I can't believe what I saw euphoria. But there were two holds that helped Jaden Daniels by nearly 13 seconds that he had to settle in, find a spot, set up, and throw that ball as far as he could. But, you know, there are moments where the officials keep the flags deep in their pockets, and I guess they thought, who cares? It's not like they're going to complete this anyway. And it was the most nonchalant catch of a Hail Mary I'd ever seen, too. It's like, I don't know that Noah Brown even realized immediately what he'd done. It was so wild that he was so calm, but a hell of a play, a hell of a play. And you got to have somebody deep on that, not just to try to catch the ball, but remember, once the ball's touched, the pass interference rules go off. That's why there needed to be somebody deeper than the deepest receiver, because if there is a tip and the ball goes up, you wipe out the guy who's closest to the ball, which would have been a legal play. If Noah Brown had just been knocked on his butt once that ball was tipped up in the air, it wouldn't have been a flag.
So the Bears' loss of credibility in Matt Eberflus's as a result, Mike, has precipitated a national conversation about his job status. What do you think the future holds for Matt Eberflus?
Think about what the calendar tells us. We've got October going into November, and we know that once the regular season ends, teams will be firing coaches. It happens every year. 6, 7, 8 different vacancies every year. There were 8 last year, a full 25% of the entire league turning over in one offseason. Well, those decisions don't just get spontaneously made the day after the last game. They are planted, watered, considered in the weeks before the season ends. So when you get into November and December, that's when you get closer and closer to the point where owners start to make those decisions about what the team is going to be doing as soon as the season ends. And if you're Matt Eberflus, you don't need November to be starting with a failure of you to have your team properly disciplined, properly coached, properly ready. You know, you concede the 13 yards that made the Hail Mary possible. And then on the Hail Mary play, you don't have whoever the deepest guy was supposed to be. Some have said it was supposed to be Kevin Byard. I don't care who it was supposed to be. It's on the coaching staff that no one was deeper than the deepest guy on the Commanders. It's on the coaching staff that Tyreek Stevenson was taunting Commanders fans and really not paying attention. And then when he realized the play had started, it wasn't like he really busted his ass to get over there. He was just like, well, something's going on here. I better check this out. So it's all on Eberflus. And it puts a lot of pressure on him in the coming weeks. And this is the challenge. When you have a loss like what happened on Sunday, it's on the coaching staff to make sure one loss doesn't become two. They go to Arizona to play an unexpectedly strong Cardinals team. If one loss becomes two because they can't get over that moment, then you got to start thinking, all right, what are the Bears going to do for next year? And to Cliff Kingsbury, with his performance as the Commanders offensive coordinator this year, position himself to get together with Caleb Williams in Chicago next year.
Interesting.
Mike,
that I support that, but it's one of those obvious connect the dots conclusions to draw.
So I'm just wondering, where did you watch it? Were you at NBC? Because I would imagine, I got a buddy who texted us from an airplane, said that people started screaming on the plane. If you were in the studio, it must have gone insane.
Well, here's what happened. I was standing over by one of the producers because we were in the middle of Football Night in America, and he's got two monitors. He's got the game, and he's got the feed of the show. And then Chris Sims and Maria Taylor and Devin McCourty and Jason Garrett were standing over in front of a different monitor as the play is unfolding. They reacted, and I realized that the game I was watching on the monitor I was watching was about a second behind. So I knew that that ball got caught before the ball was even thrown as far as I was seeing it, but I just didn't know what it was going to look like. So it was just kind of a weird moment in time where, oh, wait, this ball is – something's happened here because they're yelling over there. So it was just a weird – it's one of those, you know, it gets wired in your brain. I'll never forget it. It's one of those rare moments in sports that you'll never forget, but that – that strange time lag made it even weirder.
Mike, is Dan Quinn the midseason coach of the year?
You know, they shouldn't call it coach of the year. They should call it biggest surprise, because that's really what it is. We have our preseason expectations for where teams are going to be. It's just kind of a consensus vibe as to where they all stack up. And for the team that surprises us the most in a good way, the head coach is coach of the year. I don't know that it's a reflection of coaching skill. There's a lot of things that go into getting that surprise to happen. So what's the biggest surprise so far? Steelers and Mike Tomlin, Commanders and Dan Quinn, Vikings to a certain extent, and Kevin O'Connell, although they've cooled off a little bit. But that's why the truly great coaches never get considered for Coach of the Year. We just expect it. Dan Campbell, we expect it. Bill Belichick, we expected it. Andy Reid, we expect it. Matt LaFleur has never gotten seriously considered because we've just expected it. It's the most unexpected overachievement. And so it's either Tomlin or Quinn at this point. And I think Tomlin's body of work would probably get him the edge in how he's managed the quarterback decision. He was Lone Ranger when he went from Justin Fields to Russell Wilson, which implies he's the only one in the building that wanted to do this. And he went against the grain of everyone. And it's paying off. If they can keep winning, and if they win that division, a much tougher division, I think, than the NFC East, I'd give my vote to Tomlin over Quinn. But we still have more than half the season to go.
Great stuff, Mike. Thank you, buddy. We appreciate it.
Thanks,
Mike.
We got
Jared Payton next on The Score.
Mully and Haw. Live and local. Chicago Sports Talk for your morning on 670 The Score.
Starting this managerial search, to find someone that understands where our organization is and where it needs to go, and looking for that strong alignment, it's motivating, it's exciting. And like you said, for a first-time general manager, you know, wrapping up his first year to get this chance is something that you know is stimulating. It really is. So so I view this as a great opportunity for myself and the organization, and look forward to getting that started.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. That's the voice of Chris Getz. That's back on August 8th when the White Sox general manager talked about the next manager of the team. And lo and behold, finally, Mr. David, here on October 30th, after an exhaustive process, they did interview a lot of people. They have settled on Will Venable. We have a guy that has been in Chicago before. He's a native of San Francisco, lived in Japan with his dad's career, the Dominican, and played at Princeton, played baseball, but started out as a basketball player, was a pretty good basketball player as a high schooler, and he goes to Princeton not just for the education, but because of their basketball history.
It appears, yeah, the reports are the White Sox will announced that Will Venable will be their next manager, whether that comes tomorrow or whenever the World Series ends. We'll see, but we heard Chris Getz coming in, identify the traits he was looking for. It seems that he has found his partner to grow with.
Right.
This is a guy who, in Will Venable, is 42 years old, just turned 42 yesterday, and Chris Getz is 41 years old. They were contemporaries. They were in the league at the same time. Yeah, as you say, Will Venable, bright executive who was brought into the Cub organization. Now he's been on the bench in the dugout. He has learned from Joe Maddon. He has learned from Alex Cora. He has learned from Bruce Bochy. He was hired by Theo Epstein. That's good company to keep. So he comes with credentials. He comes with a resume that's impressive. And I'm looking forward to seeing how he expresses himself, because we know how tough of a job this is now. You said the word exhaustive to describe this search. It is, and it was. It was also likely exhausting, because that's what White Sox baseball has been lately.
Just as a fan watching it unfold?
Yes.
Okay.
It's very tiring.
Yeah.
It's very tiresome.
Listen, it's a good day for the White Sox. Whether they can announce it today or not, they need the permission of Major League Baseball to announce a hiring while the World Series is ongoing, and we know the Yankees had a big rout last night, which keeps them alive. The fourth game of the World Series is now got the Yankees on the board. It's still Dodgers 3-1. The Yankees still face elimination, but we'll find out if maybe they're allowed to hire the manager. It'll happen relatively soon if it does, because this series is going to be over pretty soon. But the good news is exactly what you said. You know, if you're Will Venable, you look at him and you're thinking, why would you take this job? Why would you turn down the Mets job? Why would you turn down last year? Why would you turn down other jobs waiting? Again, maybe he thought that he was going to be the Texas Rangers manager when Bruce Bochy called it quits. Bruce still wants to keep going. And maybe it was the idea that he comes with a partner, that he comes to a place where I'm sure they're promising him all the stuff we learned with Jerry's letter at the end of the year, that they're going to change their data collection around. They're going to have
they're going to beef up their analytics.
They're going to do
that's the idea.
And I'm sure
that's the word.
I'm sure they sold him on that idea, that they got a lot of areas to improve in, and he will be the guy that will help Chris Getz put all this stuff in play.
And you referenced what happened last year in the offseason. He declined to interview for the Mets job and the Guardians job because the expectation was that he was the manager in waiting. So I think what the White Sox have done here is that they have, I know it's not a apples to apples comparison, but when you look at other sports leagues, and we're in the midst of the NFL season, the name Ben Johnson comes up a lot as the guy who's going to be the next great head coach, or the next guy who's going to get a head coaching opportunity.
Did you say the next Bears head coach?
No, I did not.
Oh, I'm
not
sorry.
Yet. That's a different story for another day. But I think when you look at Will Venable, he's been referred to as a manager in waiting, and maybe the best available among the bench coaches who interview for such jobs. I want to hear this, and I want to know or learn something about his choices. Did he pick the White Sox over the Marlins, and why? Because
yeah.
is
he
that
was down there yesterday, right? Interviewing
apparently
for that job.
Yeah. Was he given the choice, Miami or Chicago? And he understands what it's like when baseball is good in Chicago. He was with the Cubs in 2017. Yeah. He was on Joe Maddon's bench in 2018 and 2019. So I think he understands what it's like when things are going well and there's excitement. Maybe he can try to replicate that with the White Sox. But I think if he chose the Sox over the Marlins, I would understand that. But I would like to hear him explain it. Because the job is immense. It's a challenge. And the White Sox, let's face it, as we have this was history's worst baseball season we just endured.
Yeah, we can argue about that if you want to, because technically they had a better winning percentage than that. Well, I'm not
going to
make
I am not going
argument.
To argue that.
It's all empty calories.
I will rephrase it rather than argue it. The White Sox just endured and put us through one of the worst baseball seasons ever.
It was just god awful.
And if you're a young manager, do you really want to inherit that?
Well,
and why?
But let me ask you a question. And we have gone over this, and Joe Ostrowski gave us a relatively good answer, I thought. What are the expectations? You're coming in for your first job as manager, and you're going to do better than the guy that was here. There's very little doubt that if you are making changes and presumably adding to the mix, and I don't know, again, if they're planning on spending much money, but they're going to have to change some things. You're a year removed from the total teardown, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
So you should get a bump of some kind with a new manager. If you are 10 games better, does that mean you had a good year? Does that mean you're better? If you are 20 games better, then you still lose 100 games, most likely. But is that pretty good?
So
is that a good year?
This might sound like a cop-out. If I am Will Venable, I'm coming in here. If I'm Chris Getz, I'm explaining this way. The numbers were evaluated in professional sports by our record. Absolutely, that is true. And it's valid to look at the record. My sense would be there's nowhere to go but up in that context. But what you want to see is a more identifiable way of playing baseball, a commitment to something, whether it's analytics, whether it's fundamentals, whether it's a combination of both. You've got to be clear what you're getting from a Will Venable coached, managed baseball team. I don't think it was obvious with Pedro Grifol. I think we all wanted it to be obvious. We all thought it would be based on the way that he handled his opening press conference. We're going to show up at 7:10 every night and kick your ass. That was he said, right? Remember that? Well, that never happened.
That was a soundbite.
It was a soundbite.
Yeah.
We need to go beyond the soundbites. And I think when you talk about progress and growth in year one, that you want to see competence. You want to see some sort of evidence of his impact, a manager's impact. You might not see it in the standings, but people internally will feel it. And I think that people watching will see it.
You got to see it, though, in the – I mean, even if you lose 100 games, you can't be the worst.
Oh, Molly, if you lose 100 games, you're 21 games better.
That's my point.
So there is nowhere to go but up. So is that exciting to Will Venable? I hope so.
I wonder.
I hope so.
I want to hear from the guy, and I want to hear about exactly what you're saying, what his idea of playing the game is. You know, the good news, if you like good news, he's not connected to the Royals in any way.
Thank you. That's what I mean. When you talk about, all right, let's look at the baseball resume. What names stand out? You know, we're all, okay, say we're from Indeed.com and we're sifting through resumes, right?
Yeah.
And baseball resumes. And we're looking, oh, Pedro Grifol, there's a Royal. There's an ex-Royal. There's another ex-Royal. Oh, hire him. Who says that? So, no, now we're looking at, exactly, Rick Hahn. Thank you very much. So you're looking at Will Venable, by the way. You're like, oh, Theo Epstein. Bruce Bochy. Alex Cora, Joe Maddon.
Yeah.
All right, let's call this guy. Let's talk to this guy. Yeah, his dad was a major leaguer.
Yeah, he's got some good connections.
His brother was a Bear.
His brother was a Bear for a season?
Yes.
I don't remember.
2011.
What was his name?
Winston.
Winston Venable.
Played 12 games for the Bears in 2011.
Wow.
No, that was played for Lovie Smith.
The real sad reality is that I covered that season.
I did too.
And I... That's news to me.
Well, I'm just telling you.
I don't remember the Winston Venable tackle. I don't remember the interception.
Just for the sake of accuracy, he had more than one tackle.
I don't remember it.
Okay, you don't remember it.
Any of them.
He played in 12 games.
I covered too many
games. He had 8 tackles, 5 solos, 3 assists. Yes. Yeah, he was a bear. So
8-tackle bear.
At least Will Venable knows that this is a Bears town.
Well, and he's been here himself.
He has been here himself.
So he knows that it's a Cubs town, too.
Okay. I wanted you to say that, not me. Because if I said it, you would have bristled.
When do I ever bristle?
Bristle.
I've never bristled at you. Never.
I think that.
I hold you
also,
in the highest esteem.
What I feel like is interesting about Will Venable, you said it, he played basketball at Princeton.
That's pretty cool.
He was in the NCAA tournament.
You know what's wild? Yeah, he was in the NIT too. I was reading just some of the background stuff. His mom was encouraging him to stick with baseball, and he was a hoopster, and he wanted a hoop. And his mom was kind of like, "Well, don't quit baseball." And then he ends up going to Princeton, not for the education necessarily, but because of
basketball school,
the Pete Carril, Princeton is the great, one of the great basketball schools.
Great
out
tradition.
There. They once beat UCLA.
Yes.
In the NCAA tournament.
We remember talking about that.
How incredible is that?
How about the run they went on a couple years ago?
Yeah.
We had fun with that. Mitch Henderson, the coach.
There you go.
My guy.
And he ends up going there for basketball. And his mom is telling him, well, don't forget about baseball. And his dad was a former major leaguer and talked to the baseball coach. And the guy comes to him and says, hey, if you ever want to come for batting practice, you're welcome. You can come play. And he started playing both sports. So he was mainly a basketball player, wanted to be a basketball player. And it turns out that he played baseball, too, in college and ends up getting drafted in the 7th round of the draft and gets into
baseball.
It's a good
move. It's a good move.
It's interesting.
And to think of it, he grew up in California.
San Francisco.
And then he ends up in New Jersey.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I've been to Princeton. Have you been there? It's not exactly a beautiful area.
Well, Princeton's
an Ivy League
campus, though. Princeton University is a Ivy League campus.
You think that's breaking news?
Yeah, it's a beautiful campus.
F. Scott Fitzgerald went to Princeton.
How are you thumbing your nose at an Ivy League campus in Jersey?
I'm just saying I'd rather live in San Francisco.
Oh, yeah.
It's a nicer town.
Well, you love San Francisco. You love San Francisco.
I left my heart there.
I know. But I think it's understandable that he would go across the country to play basketball.
Yeah, I think it's hilarious.
It's great. He had a major league career, and he played a little bit with the Dodgers, the Padres. He had his career. Now he's going to be the White Sox manager. Now the White Sox have two guys at the top of the hierarchy, Chris Getz and Will Venable,
Princeton
who have both
guy,
played the game.
Princeton guy and a Michigan man.
Yes, a Michigan man and a Princeton guy. Both very bright, very, I think... They must have a shared vision. They both express themselves. Chris Getz expresses himself very well educated. And I don't remember, this is probably a product of him being just a bench coach or a first base coach, but I don't remember Will Venable being real vocal or having much to say when he was on the Cubs staff. Do you remember anything that he said? Bruce, we'll have to try to catch up with Bruce this morning.
Dustin, you're the resident Cub fan.
Do you remember Will Venable doing anything?
What was his big moment?
I remember he wore 99 as
a
number.
Did he really?
He was a first base coach.
Let's hope that changes.
First base coach. Really?
Let's hope that changes.
In honor of Dan Hampton.
Nah, that's baseball, okay?
Honor of Dan Hampton.
We don't need a 99 manager. No. No.
99
that's
managers.
Get off on the wrong foot.
Need a beer on the wall.
No. I don't want.
What was his number with the Rangers, David?
I don't know that. Listen, I'm not going to pretend to know.
How about at Princeton?
Will Venable did.
Do you have these answers?
The Rangers.
Or are you just asking questions.
He's just taunting me.
I know.
He's taunting me like he introduced news.
What's a proper baseball number?
I think like 27.
23. Everyone wants to be, you know, Robin.
23 in Chicago.
31.
Sandberg.
31.
Jordan. Yeah.
Something that is not beyond
How often do we actually see the skipper wear proper uniform?
That's where we actually see
the number, right? Usually they wear their 3/4 zip pullover.
Yeah, why do they wear uniforms? It's another question.
Their pajamas, managing in their pajamas.
Should they be wearing? Are they going to play in the game? I mean, he looks fit enough.
These are silly questions. How about a blazer? Still play. Yeah. A blazer? No. No. It's 162 games. Baseball's a long season.
Got to be comfortable, huh, David?
You got to be comfortable. And I want him to wear a respectable number. I mean,
that's absurd.
Why?
There's just so many problems that you got to deal with.
The last thing I'm worried about with this new manager is what number he will wear on his back.
I'm curious, though.
I can only promise you I will not wear that name or number on my back.
He was number 25 as a major leaguer. He was number 30 with, I believe, his Texas Rangers stint.
What was your number?
What was my number in
at Ball State?
At Ball State, number four. I was number four.
He has that. I remember on Zoom, I used to see your jersey behind you.
Really?
It's like I went to dinner one time with Coach Ditka. This actually happened, and I turned and I just marveled that I was at dinner with Coach Ditka, and behind him was a giant painting of Coach Ditka. You had that going for yourself.
I did not. I don't think that's accurate.
The caricature of yourself.
Will Venable played 8 years with the Padres, 1 year with the Dodgers, 1 year with the Rangers. Yeah.
That's a career.
967 major league games.
What did he hit?
He was a career. Let's see what he hit. See, that's an interesting. It's an old school ask because you didn't ask me what his career OPS was. You asked me what his career batting average was. And I'm just saying, Burstein's in at 10.
Yeah, there you go. You can get that from him.
He's a career 249 hitter. I'd say 250. Let's round up.
What's his wins above replacement?
What was his WAR? Yeah, that's the question.
What's
his exit velo?
Okay, we're not doing that. I'm looking forward to seeing what he has to say and when the Sox are going to introduce him and why he wanted the job. And
yeah, those are all good questions.
And what does this mean in terms of what he says in the relation to what they do with Garrett Crochet and Luis Robert Jr.?
Right.
Those are the two biggest questions about the Sox offseason.
What we have heard, the rumor mill or the whatever the whispers are, is that Garrett Crochet is all but traded. He's a guy that
he's gone.
Trade. And that Luis Robert Jr. will be back because you really can't trade him.
He's not.
You're not going to get value.
He's not a guy you want to sell low on.
Yes.
And right now you would be doing that.
Right.
And I wonder if they'll keep him and then flip him. At the deadline, maybe he gets off to a good start. He's got to stay healthy, though, for them to do that.
I wonder if Colson Montgomery will be up this year.
Oh, let's talk about that for a quick second. Colson Montgomery.
I'm happy to. I think that's why I mentioned it.
Did I get excited there? He had a good Arizona Fall League.
That's what I was saying.
And I don't know.
After a bad minor league season, uneven.
Does that outweigh the bad minor league season?
When you have a team that needs anybody, I think it outweighs.
Do you know that he played third base at the Arizona Fall League?
Didn't Ozzie tell us that third base might be his position?
Well, don't tell him that because Colson Montgomery was asked about that apparently in the story that I read, and he said, no, I'm a shortstop. And he apparently has been assured that he will stay at shortstop. I like what the Sox did there. They had a meeting of the minds. They had a Zoom call, I believe. And they told Colson Montgomery, just flush it. Don't worry about what happened at AAA because it was disappointing. Just go out and play. And at the Arizona Fall League, he did that. And the results were very positive.
Well, let's see what he does in training camp. Something to watch other than the new manager. All right. We've got Dan Wiederer is going to join us next. We're going to get into all what will we hear today from the Bears.
Big day for Matt Eberflus.
A big injury list for Matt Eberflus. We'll find out from Dan next. Mully and Haw on the Score.
John Heyman, insider for MLB Network.
Chicago is watching carefully, no question about it.
New York Post columnist, Curb Your Enthusiasm enthusiast.
You hate people. Well, I hate people individually, but I love mankind.
John Heyman with Mully and Haw.
I'm going to endorse the point where I say you never know with the Cubs, but I'm going to retract the I like the White Sox.
On 670 The Score.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Always a delight to bring in the great man himself. John Heyman joins us. All guests are brought to you by Aturo, your all-weather tire, aturo.com. Hey, John, how are you?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
So, right. I mean, we're just from a baseball perspective, a personal life perspective, you don't have to go back to Los Angeles. Is this a good thing? Were you counting on one more trip out west, or are you exhausted and now you're home and you don't have to get on a plane? It must be good.
It's both. It's been a long postseason between the Mets. I did the Mets at the beginning and then the Yankees. But, it would have been better for baseball to get six or seven games with these two marquee franchises. But Dodgers just too good.
Dodgers too good, Yankees imploding. Didn't have that on my bingo card, John, but that happened last night. How do you explain that?
Well, I'll say this about the Yankees. They're extremely talented, and they hit a lot of home runs, but they're not good fundamentally. I've been watching them all year, and they're just not good in that area. They're a terrible base running team. I don't know if they're the worst in the majors, but they're among the worst. Defensively, they're not great. Certainly that inning was, beyond how bad they normally are, with Judge dropping an easy fly ball and then not covering first. To me, Rizzo should have been the one. The grounder was close enough to the bag where you just touch, field it and then step on the bag. So I would say it's 70% Rizzo, 30% Cole, not covering that bag. But this team is not good fundamentally. It's just not good.
I got to tell you, that looked like a bunch of my buddies playing softball. I mean, it was like the ball is fielded and the two guys exchange a look. Like, aren't you going to run? Go step on the base. I can't beat him. Oh my God, it was a moment. Is Rizzo, is that his last moment with the Yankees? That's a tough way to go out.
I would think so. I will say this. He is very, very close to Aaron Judge, and Aaron Judge has a big say in what they do. I mean, Aaron Judge was behind Verdugo. He actually wanted them to sign Benintendi back. Good thing they did not do that.
They can trade for him, John.
He's available again, I guess. Yeah. No, I mean, he was a free agent. He loved Benintendi, wanted him back, and then he wanted them to trade for Verdugo. So, I mean, Aaron Judge, great player. You probably should not rely on the players to decide who the other players are, in my opinion, generally. He's going to want Rizzo back, I'm sure, because they are best friends at this point.
Wow.
In terms of, the actual team, I think they should move on from Rizzo at this point.
Hard to argue with the idea that Freddie Freeman stamped his ticket to Cooperstown with his Hall of Fame-like performance in this World Series. I wonder where you are on Dave Roberts. I just said earlier that, boy, two World Series titles, you look at the numbers, he's making quite a case to be a Hall of Fame manager.
Absolutely, and he averages 102 wins a year. That's pretty good. I mean, they won the division every year, but that one where San Francisco won 107 games. So I would think so. I think he's terrific. I don't really understand all the criticism, the critiques about him. I mean, he's criticized as much as Aaron Boone is. And in this game, I would say Boone made a couple of mistakes. Should have gone right to Weaver instead of Canely, probably. And then that fifth inning that was just terrible, he never appeared. He never came out, never visited the mound, never settled anybody down. All that disaster happened without him actually doing anything. So I do think they'll pick up Boone's option, and he will be back. That was the way things were going. Going into that game, he got to the World Series. Probably difficult to fire somebody going to the World Series, but he's great in terms of the clubhouse, but not great strategically. Roberts, I think, is outstanding. I mean, I think he's one of the best managers in baseball, and I would agree with you guys. I think he should be a Hall of Famer.
John, I was actually surprised by Juan Soto's answer when asked about whether the Yankees had an advantage for him. I mean, I said to David, like, if if the Mets offer a dollar more, he's going there. Like he sounded like a guy who was like, hey, you know, open bidding, whatever you want, let's go. I mean, wow, that was wild.
That was funny. Speaking of the dollar, I remember when Zach Greinke re-signed with the Dodgers. After he was already there, he told me whoever had given him more money, that's where he was going if it was a dollar more. So that's what you just said. It reminded me of that. Zach Greinke, very honest fellow. You know, I think Soto was coached to say what he did say, which was that everybody had the chance, and that's it. And so he went with the script. You know, I think it was tried about 8 times on the Yankees, the preference. I don't know whether people were rooting for that answer or whatever, expecting something to change his mind or change a different answer. But that's the answer. That's the script. He stuck with it, and that's it. Are the Yankees the preference? Will he go somewhere else for a dollar more? I don't think he's that cranky. I don't think it's a dollar, but, you know, he waited this long for free agency. He's going to evaluate everybody. I do think the Mets and the Dodgers have a good chance, and there'll be many, many teams trying from. I heard there are already 8 teams who've called. So we're, you know, less than 24 hours. We're 12 hours after the game, not even 9 hours after the game. And, you know, it's going to be almost a blank check at this point, the way he performed this year.
Well, the White Sox won't be among them. I think we can safely say that. But they do have a new manager. That's not mean. That's just trying to be real. Will Venable is going to be the next White Sox manager, John. What do you know of him? What are people saying about the 42-year-old former player and bench coach to Bruce Bochy?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a coup. I mean, he's a guy who turned down the Mets for an interview. He's turned down other teams. He did interview for the White Sox when Grifol got the job. Obviously, they're regretting that or whatever. They were impressed by him at that point. Chris Getz knew him before that. And, you know, he was able to get the guy that he wanted all along. This is the guy that he has been talking up for years. I heard weeks ago that this is the guy that he most preferred. And, you know, he was a finalist for the Marlins, and he stepped in there and said, you know, we want you, and got his man. So I think people think only good things about Will Venable. Of course, he hasn't been a manager yet. I think that will change. You know, then there'll be a lot of criticism. It's very different being a coach, as everybody loves you when you're a coach. When you're the manager, that's not the case. So it's hard to tell unless somebody's actually done the job. But I think this is the right guy for this team at this time, to get somebody who can grow with the team and has great potential. It was a little surprising because everybody thought he was the heir apparent for Bruce Bochy. Certainly knew Chris Young, his boss in Texas. They played together not only on the baseball team at Princeton, but the basketball team. So it was a little surprising that he turned down the Mets and others, probably last year, San Diego, Cleveland. He probably turned everybody down, and he wants to go to the White Sox. So, I mean, you know, someone might question his taste, but good for the White Sox. I think it's a coup for them.
I asked David this question yesterday, and he got mad at me. I thought it was too early. I'm just curious, what passes for success with the White Sox? If they lose 100 games, that's a huge boost. That's a lot better than they had been, 21 more wins. What does it look like if he's doing a good job? How would we know?
Well, it might take a few years, but you're right. I mean, right, to improve by 21 games to 100 defeats, that's a pretty big improvement. So, you know, I would say that that is correct. 100 loss season will be considered a success.
Manager of the year stuff.
Yeah, maybe not. I remember, I think, was it Buddy Bell who lost 110 games or something in Detroit and got a manager of the year vote or something because for him enduring this or something like that. I don't know. He was a terrible manager in many places, but he did get that manager of the year vote.
John, got to ask you this before we let you go. Of those 8 teams, what are the chances the Cubs are one of the group that are going to pursue Juan Soto? And if they do, do they have any realistic chance of landing him?
Well, I'm sure they'll make the call. I mean, I don't know whether they're one of the 8 teams that called already. I probably 12 teams will eventually call, because I think if you're a big market team and you don't at least put your hat in the ring, the fan base is going to go nuts. Are they a realistic team to get him? I doubt it. I mean, I'm just looking at the history, right? The $177 million for Dansby Swanson was really stepping out for them. You know, they are a big market, obviously, big revenue team, certainly a top 10 revenue team. But, you know, do they have the revenues of the Yankees or the Dodgers or the Mets or the Red Sox? Not quite. And, you know, I mean, the Dodgers have a big advantage now. That Ohtani contract is just enormous for them. I mean, you know, it's $70 million a year, but with $68 million a year deferred, the actual value of it is being figured at, by some people at least, around $29 million. So, and they gain many, many times that in sponsorship and marketing money. So he himself is a cash cow for the team. And I think he will allow them to sign anybody they want over the next 9 years if he wants to go. And they will go for him if he wants to go. Now, there was some talk when he was in San Diego. It was uneven. He wanted to be on the East Coast. I mean, all this is speculation. We've been saying he prefers the Yankees, and you heard what he said. Now it's not just a script. What does he really think? You know, I don't know. But he did wait this time. I don't think he's that cranky who will go for the dollar, $1 more, but you know, there is some level at which he will accept a little bit less money to go to a preferred team. But, you know, I don't really think we know who the preferred team is at this point. He's not gonna say anything. He's gonna play it the way his agent Scott Boras wants him to play it. But yeah, as far as the Cubs, expect them to be in it in terms of making a call. Are they going to really compete with the Yankees, Mets, and Dodgers and go over? I think it's going to go over $600 million. And that's legit, not like Ohtani, $700 million. I'm very doubtful of that. This is my guess.
Great stuff, John. Great season. Thank you for everything. Always a joy.
Thanks, John.
Buddy.
Good stuff.
Always a pleasure, guys. All right, we'll see you next year, and hopefully maybe there'll be some good stuff happening in the winter. Maybe I'll be wrong. Who knows? Maybe the Cubs will surprise us.
Maybe the White Sox will wind up with Soto. No, never mind.
Take care.
Thanks, John. God bless you. That's our guy, John Heyman. He does a wonderful job. Great to talk to him. We're going to be right back with Nick Costos. Find out who's going to win the big game tonight. Only in Hall on the Score.
The Grand Bigs. Bigs time.
Bigs.
With Molly and Hall. Bigs time.
The Bigs Report.
With Brad Biggs.
Bigs time.
Bigsy.
His name is Brad Biggs.
Brad Biggs talks football with you.
Molly and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Brad Biggs is the football man of the Chicago Tribune, a longtime contributor to the station and a valued friend. And like all guests, he joins us. He's brought to you by Aturo, your all-weather tire, Aturo.com. Big day!
Morning, Brad.
Morning, boys. What's going on?
Well, you know, we had a very interesting conversation today, and David pointed out that really Shane Waldron is something of kind of a criminal genius, maybe maybe a mad scientist, can I use the term, where he wants to keep alive the possibility that they're going to run the ball or they're going to throw the ball or they're going to have Doug Kramer throw the ball. So he has to pretend like they do that again in order to keep alive his blocking fullback in short yardage deal. And that's why he repeated, he kind of doubled down on the idea that he'd do it again.
Boy, I'll tell you what. We've litigated the hell out of Sunday's game.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's
Molly's making things up there, Brad. I didn't say any of that.
You said something that led me to that.
It gets exhausting. Like, and I heard that from someone. Like, well, they have to say they do it again because they need to have the threat of him carrying the ball. He's close to 300 pounds. If he's coming downhill at a linebacker,
it doesn't matter whether the linebacker thinks he could get the ball or not. He's probably going to be able to execute the block, but you know, the Bears would do it all over again, and hopefully, whatever they choose to do against the Cardinals this Sunday is more effective. Because what they can't have happen, they can't finish unpacking their bags from the trip to Washington and discover two losses in there. They need right. to just have the one loss that they got, and they've got to get back on track. Like, there's just too much talent in the NFC North right now to create the kind of hole for yourself that's going to be really difficult to get out of. Can you imagine being there near the end and saying, well, if you know, the Bears win the final three and so-and-so loses all of its games, they're in. Like, you know, then you're in, like, fantasy land then, right?
I hear you, Brad, and the fatigue is obvious. We're all tired of it. But let me say this. The Bears waiting until Thursday to make their coordinators available it prolongs the process.
The league, Dave. I hear you. I agree completely. And it's difficult because when good things and bad things happen in a Sunday game, it's a long wait to get there. Yeah, but that's what pretty much most team does these days in terms of their schedule.
So if you have the extra time then, why in the world would Shane Waldron, would any professional offensive coordinator then get behind the microphone and double down on one of the dumbest decisions that you could have made in real time?
I don't know. That's a great question. I don't. Maybe Mully's got the explanation that they want, and that they want future opponents to fear Doug getting the ball. But it's just it's a lot.
And it's a lot.
This has been a massive violation of the 24-hour rule, right?
Yeah.
Where they, you know, 24 hours after the game's over, they're moved on to the next one. No question about that. And they're not good enough to go out to Arizona without full focus on the Cardinals and get that done, right? Like, Arizona's competitive. Arizona's 4-4. Like, they're not going to just go out there and roll over the Arizona Cardinals because the Bears are in town. They need to be dialed in.
You know, you're making me try to get your pick because I want to know if they're dialed in. I think, Brad, I saw a thing from Pro Football Focus that said basically that if the Bears win the game, they are 71% likely to make the playoffs. If they lose, those percentages drop to 44. It's a huge turn of season game, right? You're coming off a really bad, I mean, awful way to lose, and now you're going on the road again. We know those records. What do you think about this just in terms of their season? How big a moment is this, and are they healthy enough to get it done?
Yeah, that's well. That last part, which we probably need to spend a little more time on, is probably the big one here, right? Is the health. I'm surprised that any model would have their playoff chances in the neighborhood of 70% with a win this week. That seems high to me. But you're bound to get a loss for either Detroit or Green Bay this week because they play each other at Lambeau Field, barring a tie, of course. So that's a positive, but that 70% seems mighty high to me. Now the 40%, the flip side, if they lose, heck, that even seems a little inflated to me just because of what's going on in the division so far. But a huge swing being between a win and a loss, I understand that completely, especially with this being an NFC game, and they squandered the one against an NFC opponent last week. The health's the big thing here.
Yeah.
Like, are they going to be okay up front? And what are they going to look like in terms of protecting the quarterback, Caleb Williams?
They didn't do it last week, right? And I would imagine that you're going to see the same kind of pressure on the kid that you saw really in the Houston game and last week. I think that the book is you go after him, try to defend the middle of the field. I'm sure they're going to try to do that. I just wonder, can they? And that comes back to the offensive line. And Brad, I made the point to David, I don't know if you agree with this, but I think if Sweat is able to play, that the drop off from Sweat to the guy behind him is so vast, it's a real problem. He remains the multiplier. I don't know if the drop off is that vast on the offensive line. I think that there is a hierarchy, but I don't know it's falling. You think it's more than Sweat?
I think.
Wow.
I don't know. I mean, they're both equal, but perhaps. But the offensive line is already bad. The defensive line has at least players that you can trust. I don't know. That's a good debate. What do you think, Brad?
I mean, they don't have a high-tier player on the offensive line right now, like they do on the defensive line. So I think if you're just talking individual drop-off, I'd say with Sweat, if that's, you know, kind of what you're trying to look at there. But I think Sweat will go, right? He was limited yesterday. Yeah. The coach was optimistic about him earlier in the week. And, he's the guy that's been playing through some stuff. Remember, he had an elbow injury that cost him some time there in training camp and in preseason a little bit that I think probably lingered into the season a little bit for him. And now he's got the shin. So, you know, good luck finding a guy that doesn't have something at this point in the season. But I think he's probably dealing with a couple things. And I'd be a little surprised if he's not ready to go, just based on what I've heard.
So Tyrique Stevenson probably just dealing with a bruised ego. But our guy Dan Wiederer reports that, it tweets this out, from what I understand, it will not be a surprise if Tyrique Stevenson doesn't start in Arizona. Brad, if that's the case, how big is the drop-off between Tyrique Stevenson and his replacement, whether it's Terrell Smith, is it Jalen Jones? And also, as a follow-up, how long do you think that Tyrique Stevenson would be punished if he indeed is?
Well, I think you're looking at what the replacement does. Let's assume Terrell Smith is the guy. You know, how does he play? Does he get a pick? Like, you know, that's big. It's a big opportunity for him. I wouldn't. You know, pass defense is 11 guys. Terrell Smith in there for Tyrique Stevenson. I don't think we're really talking about a big drop off, right? It's he's not going to be on an island by himself in very many occasions. So he's a guy they trust and they've liked. I'd be curious to see, you know, what he does with his opportunity, assuming he gets one on Sunday.
Who did you pick?
This was tough because of the offensive line. Like, what's it going to look like? You know, do they keep Matt Pryor at right guard? Because what have we heard him talk about a little bit is the pocket being firm, right?
Yep.
And then the idea that if you need a replacement for Braxton Jones, then you've got multiple moving parts, right, to fill one spot. So maybe Pryor stays at right guard and Borum's in at left tackle. Is there an outside chance they activate Ryan Bates before this game? That would be something. They do have an open 53-man spot that'll be filled before the game, I assume by Borum, but this was difficult for me to pick because I think coming off a loss like they had last week, that there will be renewed or heightened focus, you know, the kind of thing that if you're the Cardinals, you really don't want the Bears going through a game like that, because you know that they're going to really be on top of stuff this week. And so from that standpoint, them being dialed in, I'm like, okay, well, I feel decent picking the Bears this week. But uncertainty about the offensive line, the realization that this team has found just about every way imaginable to lose road games, it has been a struggle for me. But I think if you just go through an exercise of stacking the rosters up against each other, I think the Bears have a better team. They ought to be half desperate. So I picked the Bears to win 20-17. Low level of faith in the selection, guys.
They had a better roster than the Washington Commanders too, right?
Yeah, I would say so. And they had a 3-point loss. Yeah. Like, just because you have a better roster doesn't mean that's why they play the games. And through three quarters, they had no business winning that game in Washington, which that's the thing that's been just consistently lost in the litigation, is that Caleb was not good for three quarters. And you can talk about pressure and the offensive line. Like, he flat out really missed some throws, okay? Right. But when the game was on the line, he showed some moxie, he made some plays over and over again, and put them in position to win the game. That, again, through 45 minutes of football, they had no business winning that football game. And that's the real shame of it, that, you know, had they pulled that game out, maybe some of the corners that Cole Kmet alluded to being, you know, trimmed here and there, maybe they're still doing that stuff. So in a crazy way, maybe it helped them out. Like, you know, that you can continue to overlook certain things if you are winning. In the fallout from a loss, that there's no more, you know, overlooking some of these things.
Why can't they win on the road?
I don't know. Like, the last road Sunday win was in Seattle when Nick Foles was their quarterback.
2021, December 26th.
Yeah, that's a road win on a Seattle with Nick Foles at quarterback for the
Boxing Day.
It's Boxing Day. Yeah,
Boxing Day.
That was a long time ago.
I know, and it's really difficult to do anything in the NFL if you're struggling to win on Sunday.
So, Brad, right? I know I don't want to raise your ire by bringing this play up again, but do you think that on third and goal, short yardage situations in the red zone, that you'll see Doug Kramer line up at fullback at any point on Sunday?
I mean, if we're talking third and less than a yard, why not? Like, they look at their success rate with that play this season prior to the fumbled handoff. Like, why wouldn't you? It's worked. It's not like the previous times it worked, those teams were like, oh, hey, we really got to worry about the dive here. They watch the fullback, you know. Like, why wouldn't you?
This segment with Brad Biggs is sponsored by Est Wing Professional Tools, made in the USA for 100 years, estwing.com. I am curious, Brad, when you think about Caleb Williams and playing in Washington, and, you know, it didn't mean anything to him, but he was sailing some balls early. I'm not saying he was nervous or excited or whatever, but how do you expect him to play on the road in Arizona? It's Pac-10 country.
Yeah, I just hope they have got some stuff that's going to put them in a good spot early. Like, they need to start faster. Does that necessarily mean go downfield and score on your opening possession? No, it doesn't. That would be great. But how about get a couple first downs, so when you punt, you're pinning them inside the, you know, 15, and then maybe when you get the ball back after your defense does its job, you're setting up shop in midfield, you know, and it's just been such a struggle. So maybe he has to take some stuff on the call sheet that normally you're holding back for a little bit later in the game. And you're getting that going early, stuff you feel highly confident in, that the players feel confident in, to get a little momentum and production early in the football game.
Which quarterback you think has a bigger impact on Sunday's game, Kyler Murray or Caleb Williams?
Well, I think Caleb's got a chance. Like, just look at the Arizona defense. Like, dead last in the league on third down. They're giving up opponents are connecting on more than 52% of third downs. They're not good against the pass, guys. The Arizona Cardinals bottom eight, maybe 26th in the league against the pass, 26th in the league against the run. The sacks per pass attempt, they're 27th in the league. So I'm just, you go across the board, some of these statistics, and there's nothing for the Bears to fear. But again, what's your level of belief in the offensive line situation? And then can the Bears slay the dragon, which is a road trip, right? That's what that's become for them.
Thank you, Brad. Appreciate it, buddy.
Safe travels, Brad.
Yeah, have a good trip.
Have a great weekend, guys.
That's our guy, Brad Biggs, the football man from the Chicago Tribune. You're listening to Mully and Haw on Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 The Score.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.